And I thought, you know, if I can be physically different, see, I'm kind of a heathen. And if I can be physically different, then it's no big step to be mentally different. And if I can be physically and mentally different, then it means maybe spiritually I've got to find another answer. And so I made those. See, that was a quantum leap for me, just to accept the fact that, okay, physically I am different. Man, it was just a small step then to say, I am mentally different too. And then it was just a real small step to go on and say, these folks are talking about a spiritual solution, and I've tried all the other solutions, and they don't work. I wonder what else I could do. And that was kind of when I began to really understand for the very first time, and I've learned something. I had come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thought I was supposed to always tell you I'm alcoholic, and I thought I was doing that for me. And I've come to understand that the only person who needs to know whether he's a real alcoholic or not ever again is me. I need to know that. But I need to share that with you, because if you can see anything that looks like hope or happiness or peace, anything like that at all, you need to say, see, that's what I saw finally 13 years sober. I saw a guy who was okay. He didn't have a lot of money or anything like that, but he was okay. And I thought, now, my God, that's what I want. And then when I found out that he was an alkie, just like I had finally concluded that I was, but he was okay. See, there was a little hope that I needed. That was a little ray of hope. And I said, well, would you tell me what to do? And he said, no. And I thought, oh, God, what am I going to do now? But he said, I'll tell you what I did. And God, that got me. Because I don't need anybody to tell me what to do ever again. I'm going to find my own truth, squirrely as it may be. But I need to be able to see in front of me who has what I want. And what did they do? And that's what this whole little journey has been about for me. And one of the neat things is the old-timers will do this to you. They'll let you have that experience on your own. They'll share with you fully what they've done. And then they're going to turn you loose. Go have your experience. And that all came out of this doctor's opinion up here when I finally came to the conclusion, hell, you don't have any big problems, Elkins. You're just an alkie, okay? You're an alkie. You going to try this little deal? And that's where I went with it. I could talk to you for the next 2.5 days and never leave this part of my experience. It's just been a marvelous deal for me to know my own truth. And I don't have to depend upon anyone else ever again. You all have made that possible for me, because I can talk to you all. Anybody ever been afraid of the opposite sex? See, when I was a kid, and I'm going to shut up because I could go way off after too. But as a kid, I can remember I was 13 years old, and I thought you young women and you, I'm not a politically correct person, okay? See, when I'm telling you a story about myself, I go back to that time. I go all the way back. And so at 13, you all were girls. Okay? I was just a boy. What the hell? Weenie boy, but that's all right. And I can remember I thought the girls were so pretty. And God, I wanted to do what the other guys were doing with the girls. And you know, they could walk across a little old gymnasium floor just... no problem. They'd ask a girl to dance, the girl would dance, man, they'd do their thing, and I'd say, God, I'd like to go ask her, and my friends would say, well, hell, Jerry, just go over there and ask her. I said, I'm afraid to. They said, oh, God, Elkins, don't be afraid. And see, to them, that's all that's required. Just don't be afraid. That's silly. That's silly unless you're terror-stricken. And they say, there's no reason to be afraid. Well, maybe there is no reason to be afraid. But that doesn't erase the terror, does it? Doesn't erase the terror. I can remember people saying to me before, they'd say, Jerry, God, you're a great guy, but you're so damn moody. I'd say, no, I'm not. I look back over my life on a factual basis, and I've been up and down my whole life. Up and down my whole life. Gotta feel great. Gotta feel lousy. You know, just up and down. And I have no control over that. except when I took that first drink, and I was immediately okay. Everything leveled out. And now I've found a solution that allows me to sit here with you today, tonight. And you know what? I'm okay. And I'll throw out a suggestion, you're okay. I got to show this guy respect because I love him. He knows that. But I'll let you have it.
We're going to have a break here pretty quick, so smokers, just take it easy for a minute. Trust me. As we go through this weekend, know that I have been step-bound. I have been a legalistic, big-book Nazi. Wonderful times. And we're not going to do that this weekend. We will reference the big book because this is our guide and this is our family. This is one alcoholic talking to another. But please, God, don't get so legalistic that we lose the spirit of it, because I have done that. God has a way of dealing with me. There was a time where if you didn't write inventory exactly the way the book said, you just flat weren't doing it right, and I had no problem telling you so. He sent me a lunatic with a third grade education and a broken wrist that couldn't write. And I figured, well, I got him. I'm covered. We're all right. I flew out to his place in Palm Springs. I said, you talk all right. And in 3 days, we got a page and a half done because he was stark raving from Mars. We couldn't get him in long enough to get anything done here. He was 10 years sober before he was able to write a formal inventory. But he's been working with drunks for 20-some-odd years, and he does a better job than I do. However, this is still the best way for the most people. I sponsored another young fella who needed to be nursed for well over a year before he could get into the steps. He'd already done that. He looked me in the eye and told me, don't give me that big book crap. I've done that and it didn't work. So he'd been 8 years sober and he drank. And he'd been 2 years sober and he drank. And he'd been a counselor at Hazleton and he drank. And he'd been in and out of AA numerous times and he drank. Don't give me that big book crap. I've done it. It didn't work. And that was the truth for him. So I just let him hang out with me and vent for about a year and a half. The change in his life came not because of us. Well, it did because of us, because I was wanting to wait for him. Says we're to get into their shoes and see how they'd like to be approached gently, gently with the wounded animals. Change in his life came because of my wife's chocolate chip cookies, not because of me. He came over every day and rode around with me. And on one of those trips, she had baked chocolate chip cookies, and she gave us each one, and they were good. And he said so. That's good. Which to a cookie baker means, here, have a sack. And she gave him a whole sack of cookies. We got back to the truck, and he said to me, why would she do that? Why would she give me cookies? And I was able to say to him, well, it's because she thinks you're a member of the family. And that's the day I swear to you when his life changed. Okay. So this is all important, all this technique and all this style and all this. But if it isn't balanced by welcome home, then we have another cold-blooded mechanism for spiritual arrogance. I have been spiritually arrogant. See, I know something. I have the answer. Where I get in trouble is when I think I have the answer. And periodically I do. It's just part of my character. And I have to hang out with you guys to remind me of the best 12-step call I've ever been on. My sponsor and Lee Bowerman and I were at our state convention. We were in that period between 7 and 12 years where you know absolutely everything. And we were put together. We had our wives with us and we were dressed in our... That was back when we wore white shoes, white belts, and polyester clothes. Elvis sideburns. We were good. a call, 12-step call from a motel came in. And we were the shining stars of AA at that convention. We took it, all three of us. We went over, here he was in a motel on the bed. This guy was a mess. We gave him an hour and a half of some of the absolute finest you'll ever hear. To this day, I'll tell you. We were on. We triple-teamed him. At the end of an hour and a half, this poor, wretched guy said, it's obvious to me you guys really have your shit together, but I need a drink. And I need to remember that. It's God through me. Okay. And sometimes I have to wait for him. We have an awful lot of words that we get hooked up with in Alcoholics Anonymous. Our lingo kills people. You know that? We got to be careful with our lingo because I'm quick to learn lingo. And I'll sound so good that you won't know I ain't with it. And I'll die. And you may die with me. Sponsorship is one of the words that no longer has any meaning because it has too many meanings. I like my friend Earl Husband. I hang out with old guys. I'm only 30 years sober. I like to hang out with the old guys who really know how to do it. And Earl's in his mid-40s somewhere. He says this book does not teach you how to find a sponsor anywhere in it. It teaches you how to be one. I disagree with him. I have to. That's my nature. I think there is one place it does tell you precisely how to find a sponsor. It says to show others precisely how we recovered. That's the purpose of this book and of my life. So if you're looking for a sponsor, find someone who can show you precisely how they recovered. First of all, they got to tell you they recovered. And then they'll show you how they did it. Okay? If I'm going to be a good sponsor, that's all I can do. I love giving you my opinions and viewpoints. When you've been alive as long as I have, you have earned the right to an opinion or two. And there's no question that my viewpoint is lofty. No, it used to be noble. It's not noble anymore. One of the things that I need to remember is what it felt like 30 years ago today. Because that's the only thing I have going when I run into somebody who's fresh and new. They don't believe my sobriety unless I can tell in such agonizing detail what it felt like right where they're standing. Okay. So I get to stay fresh by working with new people and listening to them. I got me one the other day. God love him. Young. Now, I don't worry about you young guys dying of alcoholism. You recover in 3 days at best. Anyway, he was less than 3 days. I was just visiting with him at the meeting. And he was cool. He was just fine, 3 days, clean. But I'd looked in his eyes, and I said to him, you know, I'll bet you feel like there's 10 million needles inside of you just getting ready to go right out through your skin. And he went, how'd you know that? It's easy. I just remembered. I don't have to have specialized knowledge. I just have to remember and be willing to tell you what a damn fool I really am. I loved my sponsor. Drank again, by the way. The guy who gave me more than any other human being on the planet drank again. Because he fell into the alcoholic trap of where's mine? Okay? That's the greatest danger to this alcoholic's mind ever, is to think, where's mine? I'm always sitting in the middle of it. Anyway, what I have to remember, many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. I need to remember that, okay? If you're fresh and new here, you're very, very sick. That's true. Absolutely true. When I first got here, I was very, very sick. I was so sick, they turned me away from a mental hospital. Okay? They said, we can't help this one anyway. Just lock him up. And they were right. They couldn't have helped me a bit. Because that wasn't what was wrong with me. My sponsor told me the truth. He said, we don't think you're a psychopath. Or a sociopath, or a manic depressive, or a drug addict. We think you're a good actor. Just took all the steam right out of me. Let me tell you what a manic depressive is the way I am. You're getting too close to me, so I'll give you a mood swing or two. That'll keep you back. And if you're just looking at it, that looks like a manic depressive. What it is a terribly frightened little boy who's trying to figure out, what the hell's going on in here? Don't bother me. I got things to do. Who are you? What am I? Who am I? Why would you think I was a sociopath? Because I stole whatever wasn't nailed down. When I have a sense of where's mine, I'm going to take anything that comes by because it might be mine. I don't know. I don't even know what I'm looking for. And I also know, even if it was mine, it isn't big enough. There's not enough of it, so I better have some of yours too. And that sense of lack makes me look like a sociopath. Why would they think I was a psychopath, a man with no conscience? I'll tell you what I get to live with. If you are alcoholic, we get a chance to make amends and clear all the guilt and the shame. There's some things we get to live with. Now, they don't hurt anymore, but I know why they thought that. I was in my second federal penitentiary in 1966 because a guy that hired me to bring some dope across the border turned us all in. I had trouble with personal relationships at that time. I kept picking the wrong people is what I did. They had gotten this 30 kilos of marijuana up to Juarez, and their driver got arrested and had it hidden in a hotel. And they needed somebody to go get it, so they said, call Pritz. He's crazy. He'll do it. At this time, I had two little boys whose mother had split, and I was raising them on the road. God, I wanted more than anything in the world to be a good father. I really did. Just couldn't pull it off. Couldn't pull it off. So I get to live with the fact that when they called and said, will you do it? I said, of course. Because I know me pretty good. I've always known the difference between right and wrong, and I know me pretty good. I will do whatever it takes to get your approval. I will do whatever it takes to get enough prestige so that I feel like maybe I can live through the rest of this day. They didn't pay me enough to worry about. They gave me two keys and a couple $100 expense money. I did it for prestige. I would rather be known as that crazy son of a bitch who did this than to be nobody. And inside, I'm nobody. And they knew I'd do whatever it took, and I did. What I get to live with is that I went down. I'm not totally insane. I made them get it out of the hotel. If anybody's going to be watching it, that's where they're going to watch it. And they got it to me. And I put it inside of an air mattress. 30 keys fit perfectly inside an air mattress. Resealed the air mattress because there's quite an odor. Okay. I put dirty diapers on top of that, put my two little boys on top of that. And then when we hit the border crossing, I yelled at them so they'd be crying. Because they don't mess with you too much. They don't delay when you got crying kids and the smell of dirty diapers. Why would they think I was a sociopath or a psychopath? Because that's what I look like. That's exactly how I behaved. Okay? And there's no way in hell I can ever change what I did to my children. Ever. It's done. But you taught me what I can do is to create an arena where they have an opportunity to heal from what I did to them. And we call that home. I had to learn how to become part of a family, and you taught me that. This says that we're sure our way of living has its advantages for all. My alcoholic ego says that means that you should all live the same way I do. That isn't what that says at all. Me being sober has advantages for everybody that knows me. Okay? I'm much better for you sober than I ever was drunk. Okay? It has advantages for my employer. They actually expect me to show up to work these days because they're in a habit of seeing me show up for work these days. They actually expect some work to be done while I'm there because there's a habit I've developed. I work while I'm there, and when I'm not there, I don't even think about the damn place. So we're going to go through the book Alcoholics Anonymous, but I think we're going to do it a little differently. From looking at all your books, God, you've got writing in them and everything. You're all technical experts. We are. Anybody here who doesn't know how to do this technically? Yep, didn't see any hands. You're lying. could spend the rest of the evening just on that first preface. The smokers are just, they're getting dangerous. So if y'all will, now let me get some group conscience. You all are in charge of this weekend. You really are. If you want a 10-minute break, Jerry and I will be in these chairs and start in 10 minutes. If you want 15 minutes, we'll be in these chairs and we're going to start in 15 minutes. Unless you want to just come and go as you please. But this is a spiritual activity we're involved in this weekend. And God is never rude. And God is always on time. And so if you're going to get it, you're going to have to be right where He is on time. How long do you all want? 10 minutes? It's now 9:15. I'll be in this chair ready to go at 9:30. So it's very difficult sometimes to come back to that. So I'm going to give you a little image that has helped me over the years that we can use this weekend. This is a very simplistic view. But I got this from a friend of mine who's a potter. Throws pots, makes clay pots. And the whole secret to that is to get the clay centered on the wheel. If the clay is properly centered on the wheel, when the wheel begins to spin, the natural forces tend to throw it upward. And all the potter has to do really is kind of form it. If it's the slightest bit off, it begins to throw it this way and this way, and you have to work harder at it. Now, I don't know where your center is along the way. Spiritually awakened people discover things about themselves inside. I have a center that's right here. I have a center that's here. There's an energy center here. Wherever you get centered, as we get back together, just go there for a minute and we'll be still. You know, it's one of the rituals of our fellowship that we have a moment of silence, but it's lost its meaning. Go to your center, get centered, be still for a minute, and then we can start up again. That way, this is, by the way, consistent. When agitated or doubtful, we pause and ask for the right thought or action. You don't have to be agitated just because you're doubtful. And if you're talking to somebody else, you've got to get here first, so just get centered for a minute. Can we do that? Okay. All right. We were doing one of these at a monastery in the hills above Santa Barbara one year. With a bunch out of the L.A. Basin. And those L.A. people are funny. And they're really hard to get back together when they get scattered. We were having difficulty. Two of the attendees were professional singers, so one of them just hit a note. Oh, it was pretty. And everybody kind of got quiet. And her partner counterpointed that. And it was just really nice, and it brought us back together. So at the next break, when we came back, they hit their notes again, and then the rest of the group began to chime in. And I got this horrible vision that following this retreat, these AA members were going back into Los Angeles saying, "Look what Don taught us." So, and it probably happened, I don't know. Had it not been for the clear description of alcoholism contained in what we call the doctor's opinion, I wouldn't be here. I began to identify what was really wrong with me through what Dr. Silkworth talked about, the allergy to alcohol. If I had an allergy to tomatoes and I ate tomatoes, I'd break out with an itch. Well, my allergy is alcohol. If I drink alcohol, I break out with an itch. The symptom of my alcoholism, if I take a drink, I will take another drink. I got clear here. I suggest to you, I go to a lot of meetings and have for a lot of years. Rarely do I ever hear that foundation talked about. So I don't care what the topic is, I'm going to talk about the doctor's opinion. Okay? Because had it not been for that basic information, I wouldn't have made it. And Bill says it was important. In the doctor's opinion, there's a section written by Bill Wilson where he says, in our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. And that will include our system if it leaves this out. I felt I was different. And my sponsor says, the reason you feel that way is that you're different. But you're different in the same way I'm different. You heard Jerry describe how his wife drinks. My mother likes peppermint schnapps. It's disgusting. She loves it. On the day when it's time, which is strange anyway, she's almost salivating. She takes it down, pours it into this little glass, sips it, and goes... Isn't that a disgusting sound? She too will say, that's enough. I'm beginning to feel it. Alcoholism has its own sounds. I'm dying, and I get instant and immediate relief from the process of dying by taking one drink of anything. And then immediately I become restless, irritable, and discontent again, and got to have another one. And I'm baffled by that. I like to talk with people about the doctor's opinion so that they can make their own identification with it. I told you how I began to identify with it. A 23-day AWOL, I could track back to one drink, which caused another drink, which caused another drink. And all the behavior had to do with me being able to drink. I'm a reasonably healthy heterosexual male. But during that period of time, if it was necessary to get a drink, I became homosexual. Whatever it took to get the drink. It wasn't who I was, it's what I had to do. And it went contrary to who I am, and no wonder we feel so bad. You know, guilt's easy to deal with. Guilt is when you have caught me breaking one of your rules. Nothing to it. All I got to do is stand there and let you tell me what I have to do and we get it square. I'll do it, as long as you're watching. But you've already let me off the hook. You said, if you will do X, it's over. Okay, I've already done X up here. I'm done. Unless you're watching. Shame is when I catch myself doing something that's contrary to my standards. And there is no way out from that. There is no reparation for that. There is nothing I can do for that. Except get a whole new mind where I'm no longer capable of committing that act. Silkworth's very clear about that. He says, without an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of recovery. That just means a new mind. Okay? An entirely new view of life. Selfishness and self-centeredness, that's my problem. I can't solve the problem with the problem, you know. I got to find an answer. And we don't have any answers here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Did you know that? If you came here looking for answers, I'm sorry, you're out of luck. We don't have any answers. If you want answers, just go out here in Queens anywhere. Stop any stranger on the street, tell them what your problem is, and they'll give you an answer. What we have here is a solution. If you will immerse yourself in this solution, you find your own answers. Kid called me yesterday from Tennessee, for God's sake. Want me to tell him which job he should take. What the hell do I care? Just get a job. So I don't sponsor that way. Okay? I don't care where you work, because I discovered God doesn't care where I work either. Since that has awakened in me, I have tried to... How can I put it? This is about developing a relationship with my Creator on easy and understandable terms, I'm promised. Boy, what a relief that was. That means all this complex stuff that I believe, I can trash it. It's going to be easy and understandable. That's the promise. So I watched them. I came here a complete cynic. I believed that you believed and that you were insane as I was. God had created the heaven and the earth in 6 days and rested on the seventh, and for me, He was still resting. There was nothing going on. I had tried religion. I've been baptized several times. I tried talking in tongues. It just didn't work. I have been to, I walked the Red Road. I've been to peyote meetings with a washout, an Easter ceremony, had a genuine vision. Saw a great bird flying high with no head and understood clearly that was me in my life. Kept me sober 4 months. Visions are good for 4 months for my kind of alcoholic. Information won't do for me. My sponsor said to me, "Don, we don't even think the truth's going to work for you." And he told me why. He says, you take the truth into your head and your ego catches it and says something like, "Ha, I can use that later. I'll catch an edge with that someday." See, the best lies always have a piece of truth in them. That's where you start a good lie, is from an acceptable truth. So I saved them up. Of course, by the time I got to using them, they weren't the truth at all. So information isn't going to keep me alive. All the information in this book will not help me unless I allow it to have its way with me. So how are you going to do that? I don't believe in anything. That's where I came from. I died Christmas night in 1967, and I know I died because I've never been the same. But when I woke up, I didn't feel good. Spiritual awakenings, in my experience, don't feel good. They're like dying, because that's exactly what they are. You die to one thing and reawaken to another. And as a sponsor, I have a great responsibility. I know clearly my job is to help you wake up. And that doesn't mean I give you information. It doesn't mean I give you advice or rules. My spirit talks to your spirit until it wakes up. Then I can show you how to clear away the stuff that keeps it from staying awake. But during that period of time, I'm obliged to walk with you. If I woke you up, I'm obliged to walk with you. I get lessons from the people around me. God works through you, by the way. He knows that with my mind, if He came out of the clouds, I'm in trouble. And every now and then He does it anyway, but that's a different story. Just a little over a year ago, my youngest daughter produced the most gorgeous baby that has ever shown up on this planet. She was gorgeous from the minute she hit the deck. And she lived in our house for a year. And she reminded me of how you work with people. If you wake a baby up, do it gently. Don't shock them. And after you wake them up, pick them up and pat them and reassure them. And in her case, feed them. Now, I don't get to do that. Her mother has equipment I don't have, and she took care of that. If you're going to wake a baby up, be gentle. And be with them for a while after the wake. Don't wake them up and stick them in a crib somewhere. Be with them. Well, that's what you all did with me. You woke me up. Well, God woke me up. Then He brought me to you, and you shook me up. You were not kind to me. You loved me way too much to be kind to me. One of the first things you told me was that your very best thinking got you to the penitentiary, got your children in a foster home, and put your parents in a position where they couldn't even see your face on Christmas Day. That's the best I can do. Thank you for that. That was the cold, hard truth. My best thinking, that's what happens to me. Then you told me, we can show you a new way of thinking. We can show you how to learn how to live a way of life that will make sense to you. There's a new piece of information. I've been trying to live my life so it made sense to you. Never made sense to anybody. Now I live my life so it makes sense to me. And it still doesn't make sense to a whole lot of people. But until you put the bread on my table, I much don't give a damn. Okay? Life must make sense. And we are so blessed here. I don't have to even be smart. I don't even have to be able to talk plainly or walk plainly. All I have to do is share each day with another person who's afflicted with my illness the fact that you don't have to die from this and you can live a life that makes sense to you, even though you're alcoholic. You don't have to drink again, ever. Jesus, I don't have to be smart for that. I don't have to be articulate. All I have to do is tell you the truth. If you're alcoholic, you don't ever have to drink again. Come with me. And I'm not too smart, but I got some friends that are just technical experts. They'll show you everything. Come be with us at 6 o'clock on Friday morning. Jerry was there this morning. For the last 2 weeks, we've been talking about the sixth tradition and the sixth concept as a group, and nobody left. Because there are spiritual principles that apply to my life too. And that's just kind of what the group does. We did away with ritual in my group. We don't have an opening prayer. It just takes too long. We went back to basics. When we first started meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous that is, before it was Alcoholics Anonymous and for some time afterwards, they all met at non-alcoholics' homes, by the way. Almost everything we have of any value came to us from non-alcoholics, so don't get a puffed head about how smart we are. They'd meet out at Henrietta's house, and Dr. Bob's wife and Henrietta and the folks that knew how to do spiritual things sat us down and said, "Now, shut up. Be still." And they would wait for someone to feel inspired by the Spirit to speak. Well, that's what we do in my home group. You come there about 6 o'clock, everybody just gets quiet. And we wait for somebody to say something. Pretty good group, huh, Jerry? I don't know where I'm getting off of. We're going to run out of time tonight. We'll get technical tomorrow. So we were told that. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and you said your best thinking got you here. You're not doing too good. For the next 5 weeks, you have nothing to say. Nothing. We weren't allowed to talk at the meetings. They read to us from the book. They described precisely what they had done in relation to this and suggested that we go back to ourselves and do the same thing. And it was the kind of suggestion that said, you'll die if you don't. But we don't care whether you die or not. It was really interesting. It was clear to me that they loved me enough to spend their time with me, but they didn't care whether I lived or died. It was up to me. How interesting. They never tried to sell me on the deal. They said, just do it. Just do it. I came to believe that there was a power greater than myself that could actually do something because I watched it walking around in the form of three human beings. My original sponsor was doing a natural life sentence for a double murder he'd committed one morning. I'd never done that. If I'd have had to identify with that drama, I'm a chicken shit bandit. Okay. I was a burglar. I'd sneak in the middle of the night. Or I would take some of your documents and put somebody's name on it. I was really good. I was a paper bandit. I was a good smuggler because I had no conscience. But to put a gun in your hand and shoot it out with the cops and kill people? No, I couldn't have identified with that. But he talked about the morning that that happened. He said he woke up feeling that nobody cared whether he lived or died. And the pain of that was so intense that he began to drink to kill the pain, which it had always done. Only this day it didn't kill the pain. It intensified it. And eventually, since there is only one honest response to knowing nobody cares, and that's rage, that's the only honest response there is. In a drunken rage, he went down to get his, and in the shootout killed some people. Now that's pretty high drama. What I saw was a man who was not capable of doing that. The man telling me the story was not capable of committing that act. And I asked him about that, and he said, "That's right, I have been changed, and God changed me. And that's why I'm here. I did not come here to get sober. I was sober when I got here. And I didn't know I was alcoholic. I came to be changed." And right at the very beginning, in the doctor's opinion, that was the promise. Without an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of recovery. You gave me the hope that I didn't have to. They said, "We're not going to sort your head out. We're going to assume you went insane about 2 seconds after birth. So we don't have to sort it. Just let it all go. Because none of it's worth a damn. You get a new mind, and God will show you how to use it." And I followed him around because I didn't believe him. Bruce was one way. The other guy was a stick-up man who couldn't do that anymore. Phil Gutierrez was probably the loveliest man I have ever met to this day. Phil was a badass from Guam, and he was bad. They threw him off of Guam when he was 17 because they couldn't contain him. He was a bad drunk. He was in this penitentiary because they finally couldn't contain him in Denver either, and Guam didn't want him back. And he'd been there 7 years, and I was the first person he'd ever sponsored. Oh, man. Phil was in there because on his last drunk, he had thrown some people out of a three-story window. This was a violent drunk. I wasn't. I was a chicken shit drunk. A couple times I tried to kill people, but that was different ways. Nothing so brazen as coming out front. Phil Gutierrez that I knew was the kindest, gentlest, softest human being I've ever met. He was a